If you're like me, you take joy in flipping through your old vinyl. I think the first thing that I got in the way of vinyl was Back in Black. No, it was For Those About to Rock, AC/DC. My dad brought it home. I put it on. I couldn't believe how cool I was. And that sent me down a spiraling rabbit hole of radio and associations with jokesters like Phil Guerrero right here. Joining us in studio today to talk about vinyl and the love of records. Here we go.
Let's do it. This is always a good one, isn't it?
Okay, here we go.
Like, that's just laughs.
You know something, Phil? I'm glad that you could join me today for this very serious conversation about vinyl. Actually, I think I would like to leave these on.
You know, those are the Yoko Ono sunglasses.
They are?
Yeah, those sunglasses broke up the Beatles.
I don't think it was the sunglasses, to be honest with you. No. It might have been the yodeling. All right, joining me today, Phil Guerrero. Thanks so much, buddy. I really appreciate this. And look, you might know him if you grew up on YTV. You might know him if you were in the fashion industry. And also, if you are working at a vinyl store in Toronto, LA, or anywhere in between, you might have had him flipping through the vinyl in your store, because I think you're the guy I know that has the most vinyl.
No, I have one of those stupid IKEA 5x5 things, full, and more. I literally ran out of room. You know what I'm collecting now? CDs, but we'll talk about that some other day.
I do want to talk about that, because one of the things I thought about was cassettes and why they didn't, maybe it's degradation, but we can talk about that. When did you start collecting records? When did you fall in love with the music? Is it the music that you love on the records?
Well, I always had records when I was a kid. I still, you know, I sold them all when CDs, like, I don't even want to talk about it.
Oh.
And that collection was like all like early, like it was stuff that when I was going through my little periods, like I had a goth period, so I had all like The Cure and
Ministry.
Susie and the Banshees and Ministry, like early, like Twitch Ministry, that album. Like,
right.
You know, yeah, like Frankie Goes to Hell, like all that crap. I had that. And then I started like collecting, what did I become? Oh, then I was skateboarding. So it was like The Circle Jerks and Gangrene and Suicidal Tendencies and The Misfits and all this like sort of LA punk stuff.
Board rock, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then after that, I became like a heavy metal freak, like a hair metal. So I had all that. And that was all collecting records. Sold them all. Trying to get them all back, but yeah,
that's what you do, right?
Extensive vinyl collection.
Mid 2000s,
I started collecting again.
How many do you think you have in total?
I don't know. Like a few thousand.
Wow, that's a pretty serious collection.
Yeah, in sections, and but honestly, stopped because I kind of ran out of room. But it was a lot of fun when I first started, where you could find like, I was going to Value Village, and I get a stack like this. And it would be like Billy Idol and David Bowie and The Scorpions and Iron Maiden and Bob Dylan. Like, but not anymore. Forget it. Those thrift shops now, like people are waiting for stuff to come out. Like those days are over. That was a lot of fun. And it slowly it wasn't like that anymore.
I remember
And that was the fun part for me. Not going to the record store and buying that Metallica record, but trying to score it.
Actually trying to find it. And I remember going and you know, vinyl in plastic and imports was a big thing. And colored vinyl was another thing that was sort of attractive.
Oh, yeah. And EPs. And bootlegs.
Remember bootlegs? Oh,
like
yeah.
They're up on the wall and they were like $100 and you couldn't afford them. But there were some bootleg live Led Zeppelin concert from, you know, Quebec or something. It'd be some crazy.
One of the ones that was going around that was a huge collector, I remember, was Kiss Live at the Budokan, I think, or somebody, some band live at the Budokan. And it was like sought after. There was maybe 70 or 80 of them in the world or something
like
that.
Yeah, it was like that, wasn't it?
I was like, wow. And it was such a big deal. And then, I don't know if you had this experience, but I had relatives and friends with relatives from like the UK and Italy and things like that. And they would come back at the end of the summer, and you'd be like, whoa, where did you get this band? I was introduced by Susie to Susie and the Banshees, for example, by a buddy of mine in high school. And I was like, And it took me down that road, that sort of new wave alternative road.
But then you're either, you're listening to 102.1.
Yeah.
Right. Or you're going to the record store to hear what they're spinning and to figure out what the new thing is or whatever.
Did you ever record the radio just to figure out songs you wanted to get?
1050 chump charts.
Yeah.
I used to sit there all morning and pause, record, you know.
1050 Chum was one of the kind of OG charting
and
radio stations.
And you'd get that chart in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Right? And I would follow and I would record what I wanted to record as they counted down to number one.
You know what I think? That chart, now that I think about it, probably sold a lot of records at Sam the Record Man and Records on Wheels. And who else was out there at the time?
Oh, there was, Records on Wheels was my big one. I used to go there on Carlton.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where there was a guy named Brian. And I think right now he's at Rotate This.
Oh, really?
And he was like this mean kind of skinhead guy. But I loved whatever he was playing. And I would buy whatever. If I walked in and he was spinning, I'd be like, what's that? And it was just like High Fidelity. Just like flip up the record. And I'll tell you, the day I flipped from like skate rock, like punk, you know, Gangrene and Suicidal Tendencies to metal was the day I came in and I heard like the fastest punk song I'd ever heard.
What was it?
It was Whiplash by Metallica.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. I was like, who is this? And he showed me the record. I was like, Metallica? It's funny. Like, I'm a skate punk. And I flipped in. They look like four Scarbs, you know, like people from Scarborough in Toronto, which were rock guys.
Yeah.
You know, with the long hair and the mullets. And
Scarbs.
Yeah. Like, I was like, they look like Scarbs. You know?
It's so funny, though.
And that's when I started growing my hair and playing the guitar.
Anybody who made that link between alternative and metal did it, I think, on the back of Metallica.
I thought it was a punk band, and it was just the most amazing shit I'd ever heard, and that's what got me to Metallica. But then I went a different way. I picked up a guitar, and then I started moving towards hair metal. So I became one of those guys.
Hi, Dawkins. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. I was trans before it was cool, dude.
You know what? It was even cool then. Don't kid yourself.
Yeah. Like, I was had the long hair. I loved it.
It was an era when albums... Okay, so we grew up. It was really important when we were kids. You got the new record. I mean, I remember people showing up at school. Like, there's no place to play your record. Why are you bringing that to school? But it was a mark of how cool you were. You know, if you showed up with the new AC/DC, I felt like I said in the intro, I was the coolest guy on earth because I had For Those About to Rock with the Canon and it opened up and, you know, I could only listen to it.
Album art was a big thing when I was growing up.
Yeah.
My dad, and I realized now my father had these great albums. I didn't know what they were at the time. Like, you know, Led Zeppelin 4? I was just a kid. What's this? It's like an old man. It looked boring.
Yeah,
I didn't know what
boring,
it was.
Kind of boring, right?
Right? Yeah, and I remember... a Pink Floyd album where the guy's on fire, you know, but I really remember the ELO albums because they look like comic books to me.
Yeah.
It was a spaceship and you'd open it up and you'd see all these, you know, like stuff for kids back then was so few and far between, you know, there wasn't Batman all over the place. It was just like,
maybe
you know,
you're
when,
like
when
me.
Did you get to see Batman? If you went to a toy store or
right.
It was just not on TV all the time or anything. So anything. So, like, an ELO album would be, like, spaceships.
Wow,
like,
they get me.
Yeah. You know?
ELO, and the other one was Boston with
Boston
the spaceship
had
on
spaceships.
It. Who else had a spaceship? Starship, Jefferson Starship.
Jefferson Starship.
Or was
but
it an airplane?
But those ELO albums were these elaborate.
Iconic, yeah.
You know, you flipped them open, and there was, like, a world you looked at where it was, like, space and, like...
Now you look back and you think, yeah, you know, my dad might have been using acid. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
But album art was a big deal.
Album art was a huge thing.
What's the best album art you think you've ever seen?
I'll tell you this. As I'm older, I've gotten into art, and certain artists like I forgot his name. He did like Judas Priest albums, like Screaming for Vengeance, and it's a certain kind of art. I love that stuff. You know, Patrick Nagel, like that Rio album cover is Patrick Nagel.
Some
like
of it's
80s
pure design
kind of stuff.
Now. Like I notice Tool is very intricate with their artwork, and
yeah,
you know, it's almost like it's almost like design artwork, repetitive design and fractals and stuff like that. And then, of course, this year I chased around for my stepson just a single album that was just green.
A green album?
It was just green. And it was, oh, man, I feel so bad now. I can't remember the artist. It was, yeah, it'll come to me. Nick, who had a fully green album this year?
I'll check it out.
This year? Oh, my God.
Let's say last year. But getting it was next to impossible because the vinyl version of this record was so popular. It took us over a year to find it. And
yeah,
then it
that
took
stuff
eight,
happens.
8 weeks to, for it to deliver.
There's stuff you can't get anymore. It goes out of print. Like
I was going to ask you that. Is there
the
anybody
Crow
out there?
I still don't have that. That came and gone. And then it was record store day and that came and gone. Like there's stuff. And, but it always comes back. Like I paid, you know, the most I paid for an album was, it was like when I was out in Europe. I got engaged, so it was sort of my groom's gift. I paid 100 euros for an Aussie album.
That's pretty serious money.
No Rest for the Wicked. Yeah, that was
a lot. Yeah.
And at the time, this was, I don't know, a few years ago, 5 years ago. At the time, the only pressing, vinyl pressing, was this European pressing of it. I got it there. And then they, of course, re-release it.
Yeah.
That's what always happens.
Does that, okay, but, so does that earlier version keep a better value than the new re-release?
Yeah, it's still as rare as, yeah, it still retains its value. I think it probably shoots it up when they start throwing other comparables. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I've got the
records,
white album.
I'm kind of off with records. Like, I don't know. No, I still buy them, though.
I've got the white album. Is that worth anything?
Depends which version.
Yeah,
have you ever
exactly.
joined Discogs? Like, it's crazy. There's like a million versions of the White Album. There's stuff on Apple. There's stuff on whatever label. And you know what I mean?
For my birthday, I was like, I'm rich.
Yeah,
there's but apparently
like,
there's 18 releases of it, and
yeah, there's
in every
one
country.
Beatles album. I forgot what it was called, but it was. The original cover was them like at a butcher shop and there's like blood everywhere.
Oh, I don't even know that one.
And then the record company didn't want to release it, so they put like a sticker over it. That's how they dealt with it at first.
Right.
And they sold those. If you could find one of those where like it's behind the sticker kind of thing.
I've heard this, yeah.
There's stuff like that out there.
That was the White Album, I think, wasn't it?
No, it was something else.
Because they did sticker over something. I remember that with the White Album. There's a relabel on it or there's a...
Yeah.
But that, okay, so
there's
that's
crazy where, stuff going on with vinyl.
Misprints, label misprints,
sure.
limited editions and stuff. Is this a big collector's world still, do you think?
It's just, it's a nerds collector thing.
Yeah.
For sure. You could go so deep. Like, I know I scored at Value Village Neil Young's first album. The version that he canceled, re-recorded, and then released because he didn't like the first recording of it. I have one of those.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible that rock and roll had to do that. They had to actually go back. Now we can change a file.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you're going towards CDs. I got to wonder, I really believe, just because of how stackable and cool they were. Hey, by the way, Nick, did we find out what that record was?
The green album.
I did not, unless you're talking about the Weezer album from the early 90s.
Nah, it'll come to me. It's a female
artist.
Or
a band named Orbital.
No.
I did want to bring up that there was that Beatles album, maybe you were mentioning, the one with the dolls and the blood.
Yeah, that's
Do you
what
remember
that,
talking about. That album cover?
Is it that one? Yeah, with the like it's like a butcher shop. There's like blood everywhere,
yeah.
And then they released it, and then they were like, something happened, and they called the.
Oh my! We shouldn't do this. It has the butchers on that, or what do they call a butcher in England? There's a name for it, but anyway, the butcher, I believe. I thought for sure cassettes were going to be the cool thing forever. Why don't? From a collector's standpoint, do they have any value? Nobody seems to want them.
People collect them. There's stuff that's worth money. I don't like cassettes. Well, see, I got into vintage stereos. That's why when you're asking about CDs, you know what I mean? My stereo at home is a stupid, like, vintage. I have two monoblocks, like, that are 300 watts each. So I have 300 watts going into one speaker, 300 watts going into the other speaker, separate amps, you know.
I've listened to music
vinyl,
on your stereo.
I have two reel-to-reels, like a big Fostex 10-inch reel-to-reel.
And what do you use that for?
Reel to reels.
Is there
to
stuff
make
that you can
mixtapes?
Just to make a mixtape, right?
Yeah, just to make it. If you play around with stuff, like, you know, to get that sound, not every record sounds great. You know, I kind of stick to, if the music was recorded in the digital age, then get the CD.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I have a Chemical Brothers vinyl record, and it doesn't sound right to me.
For a little while, when you would get the CD, or actually more to the point with MP3s, there seemed to be a loss of fullness in the sound in early days. I think that they've kind of caught up with that now.
It's all kind of here and there, you know. The reason why I'm collecting CDs again is I discovered digital audio converters, like vintage ones.
Okay.
You know, so certain high-end Denon CD players from early days.
Right. The kind we would have used in the radio stations.
Kind of, like some elite home players, some things. Like, it really depends on the DAC, the digital audio converter. Some are made by, like, a company called Wolfson or Burr Brown. And those are these, like, sought-after digital audio converters. Some of the first generation iPods, those big white ones, have Wolfson DACs in them, and those are sought after. Because what they're doing is they're taking that digital music, like the ones and zeros, turning it into analog, but certain ones will make it, give it that sweet sound.
That more full.
Yeah, like, I don't know what you want to call it. Like, you
that's
know.
That's a great thing. What would we call it? Let's give it a name.
It's like,
I do like sweet.
It's turning ones and zeros into this. A sound wave.
It actually warms it up somehow.
Yeah, and what you're hearing on vinyl is an actual needle doing that, right? Yeah. Like, you're listening to that. A needle actually follows that. And I know that with tape, analog tape, the reason why you get a sweet sound from tape is the amount of particles being moved, right? So that's why tape sounds better when it's faster, right?
Right.
And same with video, right? The particles are move. The faster they move, the better it sounds. That's why 45 like singles, like 12-inch singles, sound better than that track on an album.
I swear to God, I did not know that.
Yeah,
that's amazing. I did not know that. So
stupid vintage audio crap that I learned over COVID.
To make your record sound the best, you had to put it out on a 45 as a single, ideally, not just for pricing.
You'll hear it. You'll play those extended versions of like a 12-inch single on that's 45 RPM.
Is
same with tape, right? Like on my reel to reels, I'll have 15 FPS or 7.
Right.
You know, you can put more. Remember the cassettes? You could put more, but it sounded better when you.
I forgot
put less,
about that.
Right?
That's right. You could switch it. It was a switch on my. On my dubbing machine, and you could, no problem.
So,
we can get 3 hours on here, but.
Yeah. So DACs do, they simulate that. And some do the job better than others. There's some that are sought out.
Is technology in turntables new now? Like, if you want to
collect
vinyl? The
only thing I think they really changed was to add, like, USBs and stuff like that.
But the quality, the way that it.
I mean, God, I have a couple of turntables, not like super high end. My turntable's from Scotland.
Ooh.
It's a company called Ariston. Yeah, you know, like the good ones come from like England, like in terms of like vintage ones.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot of, I noticed that it's the hipster thing now to have a turntable. And there's a lot of garbage actually out on the market.
There's a lot of garbage. Yeah, and they're just trying to sell these kind of turnkey kind of systems. But I'll tell you, if you get into vintage stuff, anything Japanese is great and old. And those are the ones that will have phono inputs, right? With the preamp already built into the amp. That's the other thing, right? It's a very low signal out of a turntable. So you need either a preamp in the turntable. Sometimes these new ones, they come with preamps in the turntable. Or, you know, with the ground and the right left. Or it's in the old amp or the new amp. Or you have a separate preamp for your turntable, which some of them they make as a separate thing, standalone, with a tube,
right?
You know, that feeds the low signal in from the turntable, converts it to analog, goes in your amp.
As you describe it to me now, it seems like, wow, we really are lucky to have MP3s and Spotify and a few of these
sort
things.
Sort of, you know.
But the collector
end
of it...
It takes a lot of the work out of, you know... For me, vinyl really was about the bus ride down to...
Right.
To down go to the record
experience.
Store, like the quest.
Yeah.
To get that and discover new music, because you went there and they're playing something and you're like, what's that?
I sought that out on a couple of levels.
That's gone.
Yeah, I remember that bus ride downtown and thinking, yeah. Okay, I'm going to go to the Silver Snail and I'm going to go to Sam the Record Man. And
oh God, like,
that was a glorious day
for me. In Toronto, you would get off at Bloor and just walk down to Dundas,
yeah.
And you would hit a million record stores. I remember there were like two up by Bloor, you know, where the boxing gym was.
Oh,
you
yeah.
go upstairs. It was a vinyl museum.
Then there was another vinyl museum
down by Dundas. There was Star Sound. There was Records on Wheels. There was Cheapies.
Oh, yeah,
Cheapies.
There
was Music World. There was Sam's. And then there was, right? Like, you remember A&A? Like, you remember all that? Like, there were a million places
to go. You literally, by the way, as best I can remember, you just gave us the actual...
The map.
The map of that street for the records.
Yeah.
What was
Jim
the first...
Dunn's Vinyl Museum. And then you go to...
What's the first record
Star
that you remember
Sound.
Buying with your own money?
With my own money, Devo, Freedom of Choice.
For Whip It. Yeah, I brought those guys on stage when I was in radio. What a bunch of maniacs backstage. Do you think that they'd be better behaved?
Really? Those guys?
It was incredible.
They're very intelligent cats.
Yeah, that was for certain. But they were certainly into the rock star lifestyle, as I recall.
Really?
Yeah, it was very interesting.
I see interviews with them, and they're just really smart, intelligent, artful dudes.
They
you
are,
know,
for
like,
sure.
Went to college for art. The interesting thing about those guys, they went through that whole Kent State University craziness.
Yeah.
They were at the school, you know, when that was going on. That's where all that crazy, like, well, they're into Dadaism and, you know, like post-war sort of art movement shit.
Is there one piece of vinyl you listen to more than anything?
God, I'll tell you, since the wife's been working at home, that stereo hasn't even turned on. Like, and now I buy records. They're
COVID,
still, they're
what have
kind
you
of
done?
Unopened. Like they sit there unopened.
Yeah.
I hardly have the time to just sit there and power up the amps. Like, if people come over, I'm like, yeah. But it's weird. Like, music, yeah, it's all kind of here just because I'm listening in the car or I'm listening.
Yeah.
It's a real thing. It's a real thing to, like, music. It takes some time.
It's almost like you should put time aside, like, once a month and just sit down.
Like, that was
and...
a huge hobby for me, dude. Like, the vinyl collecting and then the stereos. And then I kind of, my personality is I move from one thing to another.
But
like, I was re-gripping golf clubs a few weeks ago. Now my band's playing again, so I'm playing, picked up the guitar again.
Did you have to re-grip the guitar?
No, but I have I did over COVID learn how to refret guitars.
Oh, no way!
Like, you know, put the frets in, file them, and you level them, and all that. I learned how to work on guitars.
Oh, that's good. I have a couple.
Bought tools. I bought a drill press, arbor press.
I got a neck need straightened out and a guitar to clean up. I'll send it your way.
Is it twisted or is it just like bowed?
I'm not sure if it's twisted or it's my
playing.
Is
the action high? What's the thing?
Listen to this guy now.
Like, it's hard to play? Action's high? Like, what is it?
It's hard to play because of my skill level.
No,
the action's a little high. It might be a little bowed.
I could do a setup, but
just
you've got to put the hours
words.
In and the pain.
Okay, listen, if you set it up, I'll put the hours in.
I have arthritis now. Oh, my God. It's so hard to play. I jump from one hobby to another. So.
Is your band playing gigs coming up? I promise you, I will keep you posted.
That band, we haven't played in a long time.
Well, let's
it's a long
let's get
band.
You guys back on tour.
Yeah, one day.
Cut a piece of vinyl.
Yeah, you want to see a 50-something-year-old jumping around on stage? Let's talk about these
Dudes.
Bands that are on. That I see on my Facebook is just all these bands that. What happened to the singers?
I know. I mean? Listen, like Phil Collins.
Oh, no.
Oh, it makes me so sad.
Well, I'm talking about like Vince Neil.
Oh, Vince Neil. Oh,
like
yeah.
That's a tough
it's
one
gonna
to watch.
Hit, we're all going to hit the wall. Let's remember the talent. Keep our eyes on the new talent if we need to see something beautiful. You know?
If you can make the money, I guess.
It blows
like
my mind.
Motley
the Stones.
Crue, I wish I'd seen in 84. I feel like you know, some bands, like, if you didn't see them when you should have seen them, it's just...
I saw Paul Weller last year.
Oh, but Paul Weller is timeless.
He...
Because of that kind of music.
And
you know,
he just
Style
sounds
Council.
Better
you
than he's ever sounded.
You should hear Style Council records on a good stereo.
That's where I began.
That stuff sounds amazing.
My
I'll tell you,
shop.
Simply Red sounds amazing. But you put on certain records sound like shit.
What's a record that doesn't sound good?
Fleetwood Mac, Rumors.
No way.
Yeah, doesn't sound that great.
I've heard this about some of the ABBA albums.
Some stuff, like some punk albums are just the worst recordings.
Early Smith's albums are abominable. Early R.E.M.
Yeah, some are bad. Yeah, some are bad recordings. But then you take something like, you take something like Phil Collins, right? Any of those albums, they're unbelievable on the stereo. Yeah. Like, you know, what did they call those drums? Those drums had a certain sound in the 80s. I think they called them, I forgot what they called it. But that shuggle, like everybody used that.
The synth drums, the electric drums?
Yeah, gated drums.
It would,
so
it
that
would
was
like
a sound in
the
80s they discovered, and everything had gated drums.
Yeah, so that you
80s.
Didn't hear the initial
they
hit.
They were just so big. They were just like so in your face, the drums, you know?
So
that
true.
The gated drum sound. And all those like high-produced albums are just incredible. Like, yes. Have you heard, you know, that album, you know, Owner of a Lonely Heart?
Oh, God, yeah.
That kind of stuff.
You said Frankie Goes to Hollywood. That was such a beautiful sounding
producer,
album.
Same producer, right?
Yeah.
That and Pet Shop Boys.
Yeah.
Was that Shep Pettibone?
Shep Pettibone, yeah.
Like his sound, like, bam, bam, like that kind of, you know.
In your
was
face,
it Shep
like,
Pettibone? I can't remember, but that Owner of a Lonely Heart producer had a certain... amazing way of recording.
It's always interesting to me to hear what producers did with analog production, and now you see so many studios trying to incorporate analog production back into their studios and into their process just to get a sound that's not replicated digitally properly.
I don't know if you saw that documentary with Dave Grohl. He bought this board that came from a sound studio in Van Nuys, was it Van Nuys, California? Legendary sound studio. So like, Fleetwood Mac recorded there. James Brown. Anyways, like all these famous albums were recorded there at, I forgot the name of the sound studio, but he bought that board. And it was a famous analog board. I forget the name of the doc and I forget
in
the
Toronto
name of
the... The board, I think, that the album we discussed earlier, the White Album, was recorded on and was brought
stuff
here
out
from
there.
Abbey Road. Yeah, it's
like
analog.
Old school engineering of tubes and...
It's fantastic.
You know,
when that
and
shows,
sound waves and shit like that. Yeah, it's pretty... That's what you're talking about. Trying to get that analog thing going on.
Phil Guerrero, I love to talk to you about anything, but talking about albums, because I've seen your collection, it actually has meaning, and that you're still so in love with music is very cool. So, man, thanks so much for talking to us. Next time, let's talk fashion. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do it.